Before we do anything, we're going to give you an opportunity right now to win a $25 gift certificate from the good folks at Sorgles. All you need to do is to call 412-922-1020. I want to remind you, Doug and Jess right now are ready to talk gardening with you. All of our lines are open, 866-391-1020. Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. And you can text us on the Red Automotive Line, the best deal in town. Time for the business of organic gardening. Here they are, Doug Oster and Jessica Walliser. Good morning, you two.
Good morning. I am Doug Oster from EverybodyGardens.com and the Tribune Review.
And I'm horticulturist Jessica Walliser.
And even though you're picking tomatoes like crazy, one of the questions I'm still getting is, when are tomatoes going to turn red? Lots of people are waiting. And I talked about it on TV, and the day before I talked about it, the producer posted her harvest of tomatoes. She's getting lots of tomatoes. So there's nothing you can do to speed that up. It's just the genetics of the plant, the weather, where you got them. Then they'll come when they come.
Yeah, and it's they're coming at my house for sure. I picked a big basket of them yesterday, so I might be making some tomato soup this afternoon. Whatever doesn't go into sandwiches and salads goes into tomato
soup.
Good
hot tomato soup for the summer.
For the winter. I freeze it. Oh, okay. I freeze it. I have a little bit in the summer, but I love it with a good toasted cheese sandwich.
And then I saw some posts recently about the Mexican sunflowers blooming. My yellow torch Mexican sunflower is just budding. Maybe today. Maybe today I'll get my flowers. But, I love Mexican sunflowers. A great pollinator plant and just a beautiful, huge, wonderful plant.
Yeah, mine just started blooming thanks to you and the plants you gave me this spring. I'm growing the orange variety, and it's already taller than I am and only has one flower so far, but I know in a few short weeks it'll just be smothered in those beautiful orange blooms. And I'm having just an incredible year for butterflies in my garden, and I've been hearing from so many other gardeners as well that I've spied a few monarch caterpillars on my butterfly weed yesterday and my milkweed. And the swallowtails, there's just a million of those around, and the pipevine swallowtail. So it's just been a really good year for the bugs in the garden,
well,
which
that's
is good.
It's been up and down depending on who you talk to. Mm-hmm. I did post something about, so are you seeing any monarchs? And yes, some are. You know, I saw one a post yesterday just filled with monarchs, but then other people were saying, haven't seen a one. And I'm in that category. Haven't seen one.
Really? Yeah. Well, I've found three caterpillars yesterday. What was really odd was that I was in the vegetable garden picking cucumbers, and I found a monarch caterpillar on the cucumber plant, which is not near any milkweed plants. And I was like, is it eating this plant? What's the deal? So I actually thought maybe it blew there somehow. So I picked it up on a leaf and took it over to the milkweed plant, and it seemed to be very happy to be there. So hopefully I did it a favor and didn't hurt it in some way. But I thought, well, you know, they need the milkweed. They can't eat anything but milkweed. So,
and the calls are coming in about tomato plants, Septoria leaf spot and early blight. I'm hearing a lot about that. You know, the typical explanation of the bottom leaves turning yellowish and brown. I'm getting it a little bit. I'm not worried about it. I'm just removing the infected foliage. It's too late for me to start. I'm you know, the tomatoes are on there. They'll be fine. They'll turn when they're ready, and I'm just going to let it do its thing.
Yeah, I've had Septoria leaf spot for the past maybe 2-3 weeks, those bottom leaves, and I'm trying to keep after picking them off the plant as soon as I see them and throwing them out in the garbage and not on the compost pile, because, of course, those spores can stay in the compost and infect next year's plant. So I really am trying to do a good job of removing them, but it's a definite chore and task to make sure that you get out there with a nice clean pair of clippers and cut them off the plant as soon as you spy them. But it really does do a good job of helping to manage that disease.
Is there anything new in the tomato garden that you planted that you love? Is there anything that's really super cool?
Well, I wasn't so sure about that Dancing with Smurfs variety that I got with the silly. I bought it for the silly name, but
you
wanted to.
You were complaining about it a couple weeks ago.
I didn't really like them when they first started ripening, but they're getting sweeter now. And I don't know if it's the weather or what it is, but they're tasting a little bit sweeter. I'm appreciating them a little bit more. They're a really big cherry too, so they're kind of a meaty, bigger cherry. They're not that sort of real acidic tomato taste. That's what I really like in a tomato.
That's what I like too.
Yeah. So they're that. They're not my favorite, but I do. They're definitely interesting to look at in the garden too, with that purpley red. which is fun.
There's a cool thing going on today at Sorghos. It's Sorghos Harvest Festival from today from 11 to 5. Lots of fun stuff to do. There's an open-air farmer's market. Oh, I can't imagine all the stuff they're going to have there. Fun educational tractor rides, games, activities, face painting, peach desserts.
Ooh. I saw they had grilled corn there, too, on their Instagram feed yesterday.
I thought you were going to say you had me at peach.
Yeah, right?
Great food and lots more. Today, Sorghos, 11 to 5, their Harvest Festival. That is going to be awesome.
All right, folks, if you want to talk to Doug and Jess, I highly urge you to start calling ASAP. Congratulations to Mary Ann from the Northside, winner of that Sorghos certificate. 866-391-1020, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. Good morning. All right, Carl, Troy Hill, Doug and Jess, the Organic Gardeners. Hey, Carl, good morning.
Good morning, folks. I recently got a house in Grove City, and it had two of these arborvitaes. Is that how you say that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they're about 4.5 to maybe 5 feet tall at the most at this point. And I noticed recently the very bottom of branches towards almost like the first ones up from the ground are getting brown. Is there anything wrong there, or what should I be doing?
The first question I always ask when you have limbs on the lower evergreen like that turning brown is there any chance there might be a cat or a dog that's using it as their commode?
Because, I don't think so.
Okay, because I was going to say, because that can really cause those lower branches to turn yellow and crispy and die off. The other thing that could be happening is it under the eaves of the house where it doesn't get enough water from rain?
Nope, it's right smack out in the backyard with no kind of impediments as far as that's concerned.
Okay, and do you know how old those shrubs are, the arborvitae?
Well, I don't, because they were planted by the previous owner, I presume.
Okay. So, you know, it could be a little bit of drought stress happening because we did have such a wet spring and then things dried out a little bit. So sometimes that can cause those lower, you know, especially the inside of the shrub. So if it's towards the inside, you have that needle drop happening, turning yellow on the inside. That's a lot of oftentimes indicative of drought stress. So I would maybe do in the springtime, give it a little bit of fertilizer specific for evergreens. So something like Hollytone, which would help as well. There's not really any fungal diseases that are super common on an arborvitae. Doug, do you have any thoughts on what it could be?
No, but I actually want to talk to you about another conifer issue that we had last week. So, no, I think you're right on the money there for the arborvitae.
Basically nothing then, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would make sure that it has enough water because I do think drought stress could be a factor here with how dry it's been off and on over the last couple of weeks. So I would make sure that it's getting ample water, make sure that no animals are using it as a potty stop, and I think that you'll be okay if you give it a little fertilizer.
Well, I do have some rabbits that come around. Maybe, would they?
No, it wouldn't be them. It's usually cats and dogs, male cats that will spray and dogs that will lift their legs, so yeah.
You know, arborvitaes are tough. They'll be all right.
Yeah. Okay, so you had a question
last week, Todd Sherbandi and I were trying to figure this out. There was our friend Lori called, and she has a Skylands conifer, and just the top of it was turning brown. And he was wondering maybe bagworms. Well, she took a close look at it, and actually she's a member of the American Conifer Society. It was white pine weevil, which is something that, you know, big out west, you know, Pacific Northwest, but and so it is a nasty pest.
Yeah, and it causes all those growing tips and shoots to wither and sort of turn like a shepherd's hook, right? They wilt and then they die.
It looks bad.
Tip. Yeah.
It was a beautiful tree.
Yeah. Oh, that's too bad. I've actually seen that happen on white pines, but they usually will recover because they'll sort of develop a new, you know, not really a new leader, but the branches will kind of overcome it. But a nice little dwarf conifer like that, that's a shame. That's a big shame.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah.
Barbara, Highland Park, up next for Doug and Jessica. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I'm calling about our fig trees. And the problem is they're really healthy, and they have multiple figs, but the figs are not they're not getting any bigger. We have mission figs and turkey figs. And they're just about the size of a cherry tomato, and they've been like that, and they're not getting bigger.
Ah, figs. Aren't figs wonderful?
Lovely.
I've got one that you know, it didn't come. I didn't think it was going to come back for the winter. It's finally sprouted up. It has no figs on it. I've got another one that I bought for $10 because it hadn't leafed out at the nursery at Hahn, and now it's filled with beautiful leaves, no figs. I mean, is it growing in full sun? Does it have what it needs? Because if it does, you're just going to have to kind of sit on it and wait and hope for the best, and maybe you'll get some little figs and they'll ripen up for you. That's the thing. Will they ripen up?
Will they ripen? That's the problem. They're hard. They're beautiful. The plants are beautiful, but we have multiple figs, like I said. But do they need fertilizer? What do they need?
Are they in a pot? Sun. Are they growing in
no,
pots?
No, they're in the ground.
In the ground.
Okay. Water.
They're
sun.
They like sun. They don't really need much fertilizer. You know, they kind of grow as a weedy plant in Italy, and we've had enough rain, that's for sure. So I think it's just waited out. It's kind of like the tomato issue, you know? I mean, they're there. Think of that. You got figs. And you still have another at least
two months
to get them.
That's encouraging.
Yes, I think you'll be okay. You know, as far as the size of them, that's just, I think it's just the plant and what's happening. Unless they're in pure clay or something like that.
No.
Yeah, they're in decent average garden soil.
Mm-hmm.
I just waited out.
Well, thanks.
Good luck.
Okay.
Okay, let's say hi to Tom Bethel Park for Doug and Jess on the Organic Gardeners, KDK Radio. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. I took your advice on the daffodils and took the spent flower stalks off. I wanted to ask you now about gladiolus. They are flowering, and when they are done, do you remove that stalk?
Yes, you should remove the flower stalk to prevent it from setting seed or from developing seeds, because any bulb plant like that puts a lot of energy into producing the seeds, when instead what you want it to do is take that energy and put it into making a bigger bulb so that you get bigger and better flowers for the next season.
Okay.
So same thing with those gladiolus. Let the leaves go. You want the leaves to turn brown naturally on their own, but the flower stalk should be cut off.
Do you remove the bulbs at the end of the growing season? Do you take them out of the ground?
That's the million-dollar question, right? Because technically, they're not officially hardy here, but for many, many gardeners, they do return every year.
Somebody sent me some.
Yeah.
I don't really have the sun to get them to do what they need to do. They'll do it a little bit, but I never touch them, and they keep coming back year after year. They're out in the vegetable garden, there's no protection, so they're actually making it on their own. And I think for a lot of people, glads are making it on their own nowadays. Are the glads that you have, were they planted this year, or did they winter over?
No, they wintered over, and I'm looking at them right now, and they're gorgeous.
Yeah,
Beautiful.
So we have to have a really, really cold year for them not to make it. So most people just leave them in the ground. But if you don't want to take the risk, you can lift them and store them in a box of peat moss in the garage or another, cold area, like a cold cellar or a basement or something like that, to ensure that they'll come back and then replant them in the spring. But most people just leave them in the ground.
What do you think about a covering over with leaves?
Yeah, shredded leaves.
An insurance policy.
Yeah, shredded leaves, thick straw would be fine. It would certainly help.
Okay. Is it too late to start broccoli plants from seeds and get something, very late fall? Is it too late to do
that? Yeah, I think it's too late to do that. You would have had to start them about a month ago.
It's going to be hard to find the plants.
I was going to say, if you can find the transplants at a nursery that does have... Some nurseries will carry fall transplants, and if you can find some, you can go ahead and put them out in the garden.
What area do you live in?
Bethel.
So I know that for sure that when we get to the season, usually Chapin's has a whole series of those fall. They have in the past. So, a good nursery usually is bringing those plants in nowadays because more and more people are planting that way.
Okay.
Because Jessica and I have told them to plant that way.
It's all our fault we got them addicted to gardening. That's the problem,
yeah.
Right?
Year-round gardening. Come on.
Yay.
Don't stop.
Yeah, that'll last till about November. You'll be like, stop.
Stop. Please stop.
Right.
Susan, Allison Park for Doug and Jess. Last call, the first half hour of the program. How are you, Susan? Good morning.
Is this for me?
Yes,
yeah,
you.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. You said Susan. I'm Suzanne. Okay. I'm back to last week's show. I called in about the tree in my front yard that the Duquesne Light's taking out, the two trees.
Right.
I looked and I searched, and they are California Dawn Redwood.
That's what Todd was guessing.
And that Mr. Davey Trees was right on the money.
Yeah, Todd Scherbondi, the explanation of the tree was that it looked fern, like a fern.
Yeah, that would be. Yeah, so. Makes
and
sense.
And I'm so depressed that these are being taken out, because they are my front yard looks so especially nice this year, and then they're going to come in here and trash my front yard, taking these trees out. They're big trees.
Oh.
Yeah.
But the first owners of this house, my house is 60 years old, and the first owners planted all kind of trees. So he must have chose these trees for the front yard.
Mm-hmm. They are great trees. I have two in the backyard, and I can imagine what a change that's going to be. I do, yeah. We have two, and I can imagine that's going to be a huge change for you.
And I've got one in the back also.
Well, he was saying, Mr. Davey Trees was saying something about they were, either that or I read it, something about they're close to extinction. Is that true?
Well, they were. They actually didn't even know that they still existed, and then somebody found one in the mountains
in
of China or something.
A valley in China during World War II. They found them, and actually a lot of the plant material still comes from that valley.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, does Penn State ever come in to take cuttings off of trees to keep them in existence?
No, this is actually now has become quite a common plant in the nursery trade. At once, it was very rare and unusual to see them, but now you can find them quite easily at most local nurseries. It's a great tree.
All right, we've got some Dollar Bank instant access messages, some Right Automotive text messages, and we've got some available space on the phone line. So 866-391-1020, Dollar Bank instant access, kdkradio.com, and you can text us on the Right Automotive line, the best deal in town. Next hour, your favorite deli sandwiches with Joe and Frank Dantisi. Of course, the Coons Cooking Hour, then Heffron, Tillotson, Germani, and You, and then everything that is sports on the Coons Market Black and Gold Sunday Show. Hey, before we give away this certificate to Janoski's, pick your own weekend next weekend. That's a pretty cool thing, isn't it, Doug?
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine nowadays? That's awesome.
Yeah.
You think like, oh, no, we can't pick your own liability and this and that, but just go and pick your own stuff. When I was a kid, we used to do it. I'm sure you guys did it.
Oh, yeah, yep.
In fact, when I was a kid, they used to give you this kind of like big vest at the apple orchard, and it like had a big pouch in it, and so you would just fill that pouch up with apples and go
pretend
home.
You were a kangaroo.
I had one of those vests. They tied the arms behind my back.
Yeah, that's a different type of vest.
Yeah. The rooms were padded.
Was it white with big buckles on it?
Right, yeah. Absolutely.
But that's gonna take me away. Ha ha. Hee hee. Ha ha.
That's next weekend. And if you would like to call in now and be the 10th caller, you can win a wonderful $25 gift certificate from Janoski's, 412-922-1020. Let's head out to Armstrong County and say hello to Robert. Robert, welcome to KDK Radio. Say hi to Doug and Jess.
Hey, how y'all doing?
How's it going?
Okay. Hey, I got some extra basil. I want to save it for maybe December or January. What's some good ways of doing that?
I like to freeze. I don't like to dry. I like to just put it in a food. This is the way I do it. Everybody does it differently. I'm sure Jessica will have a different way. I like to put it in a food processor with a little bit of olive oil, some garlic, and then I freeze it into ice cube trays. It becomes these like intense dark green super basil cubes. That one cube is
super basil.
Super basil cubes. One cube is enough for some sauce or soup or whatever you want to make out of it. How do you like
to
do
it? Yeah, that's how I like to freeze mine too, actually. And the ice cube trays are really nice because it's like a single serving of basil to go with. What you don't want to put in there is you don't want to like add the cheese and stuff already to make it like an official pesto, because that cheese often tastes kind of icky after it comes out of the freezer. So I usually don't add the cheese until I'm ready to cook it. If you are going to dry basil, I've actually found the most intense flavor that you get from dried basil comes from drying it in a food dehydrator rather than, normally with a lot of herbs, I'll just like hang them in bunches and let them naturally air dry. But with basil, it will really lose its flavor that way. So if you have access to a food dehydrator, it dries really, really quickly that way and keeps that basil flavor better than hanging drying would. Those are definitely the best ways to preserve the basil. There's not like I wouldn't just throw the leaves in a freezer bag like I would do with parsley, because they get really dark and kind of slimy and lose their flavor. So, yeah. Okay.
All right. Okay. Thank you for the call. Okay, let's take care of some of this social media stuff. We got a text message that came just moments ago, right out of Motive text line, best deal in town. A peach tree whose fruit always seems to go bad on the tree. Is there anything I can do about it?
Probably brown rot would be my guess. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we always say it.
Peaches will break your heart.
Yes, they will.
I didn't know if you wanted me. Yeah,
no, you give you the line.
They do. And brown rot is really devastating because it usually strikes when the fruit is just about ripe, and you'll start to get sort of a brown sunken canker on the fruit, and then it will just shrivel up, and it's really sad. And the only way to prevent it is with using an organic fungicide that's labeled for use against brown rot. So something like the brand Serenade, which is the one that we really like, that works really well, or even something like lime sulfur, which is an organic fungicide, that will work as well. But you have to do it as a preventative.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Once the pathogen starts, it's one that's very, very difficult to control. So if you know, it sounds to me like you get it every year. So I would start doing it when the peaches are about the size of a nickel. And I think the label will probably be about every 14 to 21 days. That you have to spray, but it is really, really effective against brown rot and other fungal pathogens as well on peaches.
Dollar Bank Instant Access, KDKARadio.com. Last fall, I cut my Rose of Sharon down to the ground expecting new growth in the spring. So far, no new growth. Did I kill it, or is there maybe some hope?
Jess, you would probably have a party if something like that happened.
I kind of would. I'm not a big fan of Rose of Sharon's, personally.
Well, what's this party all about? The Rose of Sharon didn't come back.
It's the death of the Rose of Sharon. If it has not sprouted new growth by now, it's probably dead. Which is pretty amazing because they're really, really difficult to kill.
Never heard of one getting killed before.
Yeah, especially not from pruning, because they are a plant that you typically can cut all the way back down to the ground, and it just comes back like gangbusters. So, but unfortunately, I think in this case, maybe something else was going on, and the plant did not revive.
If you do want to put in another Rose of Sharon, pick one of those newer ones that's sterile, that doesn't make a lot of babies. You know, they have some beautiful ones out there, doubles and that sort of thing. That's the downside to Rose of Sharon, is it's such an invasive, it's just hard to keep up with everything that Rose of Sharon does. Some people that I know love the flowers, but...
Like yourself.
Yeah.
The bees love the flowers, too. I mean, the bees go gangbusters for that.
Birds love the seeds and everything, but I certainly understand the... You know, they make babies like crazy. They throw seeds everywhere. They're just they're just a memory. They're a memory tree. That's why I love them, because it just takes me back to another time.
When you really liked Rose of Sharon. when your kids played baseball, was that the story?
Basketball.
It was basketball. Okay. All right. Under the Rose of Sharon tree. Yes. Anyway. That's the memory song from Rob.
Yes. You know what? It is so true. We are so dramatic with our lives the older we get, you know? And I remember saying to my ear, I'm going to hear the same story from my grandmother when I go over there. And now I'm telling that
story. Poor Jessica's heard the same story. She's like, what is it? Baseball? Basketball? What the heck do they play? They play some sport on your... tree, and now you got to have it.
As my dad would say, you wait, young lady, till you get to be our age. All right, Dan in New Kensington, cantaloupe on his mind. Say hello to Doug and Jeff, the organic gardeners. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. I have a problem with a few cantaloupes. They're turning orange on me, and I don't know what's going on with that there.
The
fruit or the foliage?
The fruit.
Mm.
Cantaloupes?
Yes.
They're supposed to turn... I'm confused. So they're supposed to turn orange. Do you mean like between the nets on the outside of the fruit?
Well, the whole fruit itself.
Yeah. So I think it's just... I think it's the variety that you're growing.
Well, they're called a Minnesota midget.
Okay. So the netting on it, the netting should be sort of a yellowy tan color. And then the skin in between the netting on the outside of that cantaloupe will turn sort of a yellowy orange when the fruit is ripe. Do you think they're not ripe yet? And it's the problem is that they're turning before you you feel like they're ripe?
I'm a little confused on that. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. So one of the ways that you can look with a cantaloupe to see if it is ripe is you look at the tendril that's opposite of where the cantaloupe attaches to the plant. So if that tendril there has turned brown and died, that's a good sign that that melon is ready to pick. And cantaloupes do, they often slip off of that vine very easily. So you don't have to give a real hard tug when they're ripe. You just sort of pick up that fruit and pull a little bit. And if it pops off of the vine, then you know that it's ready for harvest.
And I'm looking, at some pictures of Minnesota midget right now, and it looks pretty orange, the fruit itself.
Right, when they're ripe. Yeah, they do have that orange color between the netting.
All right. Thank you for the call. Short break. We'll come back and we'll get back to more of your phone calls. Stay with us. Doug and Jess continue on KDKA Radio in moments. Good morning.
Get ready. It's Mrs. Know-It-All. She's a grower, horticulturist, and our garden goddess, Denise Schreiber. Good morning.
So I dry my basil in a food dehydrator.
Mm-hmm.
But occasionally, if I've been baking after I shut the oven off and leave it the door open for a while, then I'll put a tray in there and just let it dry that way. Just the residual heat helps. And actually, preserving, you know, herbs and, you know, other goodies from the garden is actually what I'm going to be talking about today. It's sorghums. Plus, Doug, if you really want to come up, I have peach blueberry preserves.
Wow.
That people are going to be able to sample, too. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk about freezing, canning, drying, and just general questions about, you know, the types of fruits and vegetables that, you know, people want to have, you know, in the pantry for the winter, plus, you know, food safety. You know, that's always important when you're doing canning.
Yeah, and it's something that can be intimidating for people, although when it's done right and you learn from someone like you who's a master canner, it actually is a very easy process and simple process, but you do have to learn how to know how to do it right.
I'm afraid of it. You know, I didn't grow up with it. So, you'd have to have an expert like Mrs. Know-It-All teach you how to do it.
All right. A text message, right automotive text line, best deal in town. Dahlias wintered in their pots in garage. No blooms. Also, blueberries shriveled on plant.
So no blooms on your dahlias. Well, there's still time. Dahlias are late bloomers, just like me. And they'll come, you know.
Is that what it is?
As long as they have what they need, as long as they have, they're in a pot and they've got enough fertility in there, it's going to bud, it's going to flower. That's just what they do.
And make sure they have full sun because that will bring on the blooms too. And don't over-fertilize with nitrogen because that is not a good thing. That makes a lot of green, sometimes at the expense of flower production. So watch what types of fertilizer you use on flowering plants like that, or you could be preventing.
What was the other question there, Rob?
That was it. Oh, the other question?
Blueberries. About blueberries?
Blueberries shriveling on plants.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
So shriveling. That's
what
unusual.
What does shriveling mean, like wrinkling?
Yeah, I guess so. And kind of like
drying up.
Drying up on there. There are some little worms that get inside of blueberries. They're not real common here in Pennsylvania. So I would not necessarily attribute it to that. It could be a fungal issue, but blueberries are usually pretty simple and easy as long as you harvest them on time. If you let them on the plant too long past harvest, they will naturally shrivel up like that and dry up. So I'm wondering if you're just missing the harvest window, those few days where they're really at their peak, and then they would dry up and shrivel up on the plant like that. That's what it sounds like it might be the situation.
You know, somebody gave me one thornless blackberry plant a few years ago, and boy, we have more blackberries out of that thing than you could possibly imagine.
Really? And you get enough sun for it there.
Well, they don't get much sun. It's under a big giant pine tree. So, no, it doesn't get much sun at all, but it puts on berries like crazy. Yeah, we've been picking them every day.
Good.
It's been awesome.
That's what the blackberries, where you once have one blackberry, you now have hundreds of blackberries. Right.
Dollar Bank Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. My pepper plants are not growing. They've been in the garden as long as my tomatoes. Lettuce are flourishing, but pepper seems stunted. My spinach will not grow either. Thanks for the help.
So, soil test would probably be the best thing. Just figure out what's going on there. You know, the fact that the other things are growing, maybe they're growing in another bed or something. You know, it's been a good year for peppers,
mm-hmm.
you know, with all the rain and warmth. What was the other crop that she was talking about, that they were talking about?
Spinach.
Oh, spinach. Well,
this is not the time to be growing spinach.
Spinach only likes cold weather, you know, so this would be the time to maybe start some spinach, maybe even a little later.
Yeah. I usually wait till late August, sow some spinach. Sometimes it comes up in the fall, and sometimes the seeds sit there all winter long, and then it sprouts in the spring. And that's actually when I get the best spinach crop, is by planting in the fall and letting the plants or seeds just sit in the garden over the winter, and those make the best. March, man, they make the best greens.
I love to do that too, and it's just so great to see that sprout up first thing in the spring, and then I can, if it's a mild winter, I'll have some sprouted and just give it some protection, and sometimes that spinach will sit there all winter under a floating row cover or under a little bit of plastic, and then next year, if they make it, they go nuts.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. One thing that person can do with their peppers that might help is do a foliar feed. So like a liquid organic fertilizer, something like Espoma has one called Grow. That's a great liquid fertilizer that you mix with your irrigation water, and you can actually get it on the foliage and the root zone of the plant, and it would absorb it through both the leaves and the soil. And that will give a little bit of extra nutrition, the right type of balance of nutrients, and might help get that plant going and start producing some fruit.
You know, and speaking of that Grow, that's what I'm going to be using today. I'm going to fertilize all my containers.
I love
today.
That stuff for my pots,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
What I'm going to do all my containers today. That's an important part about growing in pots. And even though I do have a lot of land, I've got probably 40, 50 pots out there with different things, flowers and vegetables and stuff. And guys from Davy Tree were actually at my house a couple days ago after an oak tree fell and took down a pine tree, went on the house, which I didn't care about, but my beautiful flowering crab apple tree was underneath.
You didn't care, but that it went on the house.
Ah, that can be fixed. The crab apple, though, was the guys, the three of us sat there looking at it thinking, I said, guys, this tree really means something to me. And they're like, well, it's going to look funny. I said, yeah, it's going to be my ugly little tree. So they cut it up in a way that I'm hoping that we'll see what happens.
Oh,
left
that's too bad.
One little sprout off the one side that hopefully will become kind of
a bigger sprout.
Kind of the central leader. We'll see.
All right, listen, we're going to take our final break, come back, wrap up the hour with Doug and Jess, and get ready for Joe and Frank. Deli sandwiches today on the Coons Cooking Hour. Good morning.
So this is the time, though, to think a little bit about planting for the future, for planting for the fall. And like you said, maybe it's too early for spinach. That's the thing, you know, you could put in some spinach or something like that, and then you get a hot spell, and then boom, it's going to bolt and go to
seed.
Right.
But it is a great time if you want to do a late crop of beets or something like kale or lettuce, cabbage, if you can get a hold of some cabbage transplants. Right now is a great time to be putting those late season crops in.
Put your arugula in?
Yeah, lots of arugulas. You know how much I love arugula.
Arugula. I'm going to be planting arugula. Not for everybody, though.
Yeah, it isn't. But all those fall crops, man, they love this weather when we start to get cooler here in the next couple of weeks. So sow them now out in the garden, and then you'll be harvesting. You know, you might maybe be able to pick your own carrots for your Thanksgiving dinner, which would be a wonderful thing.
You know, the thing is that anything that sprouts there, you know, when you're thinning it, all that you can use. You know, I love the thinnings of carrots. You know, those little things, the tops and everything, and just throw them in. It's just such a wonderful, intense flavor. That's one of the reasons we garden, is for that, the freshness of everything. That's what we're reaping now with the harvest. It's just so much fun after all that work. I got a new pepper. Oh, gosh, I can't remember the name of it from Burpee, but I think it's pimento. No, I can't remember the name of it, but is it? Beautiful color, you know, little sweet peppers, and then I have lots of super chilies. I'm going to make like my dehydrated hot pepper flakes.
Nice.
Hopefully you'll take some this year.
We grew these Thai super hot chilies, and they're teeny tiny. They're like the size of your pinky fingernail. They're really little, but man, are they hot. I said and John loves hot peppers, and I gave one to him. I'm like, try this, because he's always my taste tester. I'm like, try this, see how hot it is. And he took like a little bite, and he was like, oh, it's hot. I said, is it hotter than a jalapeno? He said, oh, it's hotter than a jalapeno.
Whenever the pepper is little like that,
you know it's going to be
worry.
Hot. Yep.
You've definitely got to worry.
And there's about a million. I have one plant, and there's a million of them on that plant.
That's just like super chili. I just kind of stuck them in a pot and let them do their thing. And I've been giving peppers away like crazy Do you like hot peppers? Oh, yeah, I do. Here, but be careful with these.
Yeah.
The super chilies are not like a ghost pepper or a Carolina Reaper, but they're way above a jalapeno. You know, they're actually, I love hot peppers too, but they're actually too hot for me just to eat raw like that.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, the organic gardeners always aim to create a better place to garden.
And a safer place to live.
All right, there they go, ladies and gentlemen. Everybodygardens.com. Doug Oster, of course, he and Jessica both part of that Trib Live brand. Check them out. Great videos, great articles. They do it all. And be looking for them coming to a nursery or speaking engagement near you.